Hey everyone, I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio, the show that gives you the facts about relationships and love. Now, I've been helping individuals and couples improve their relationships for the past 30 years, and today I'm here to give you science-based strategies for your relationships and those of your children. Welcome, everyone. I'm Dr. Terry, and thanks so much for listening. I have another great program for you today. Today, we're going to discuss how to handle difficult conversations with other people. And I know that most of you have been in a situation with family, friends, people at work, or even a romantic partner where you were talking, and all of the sudden, your emotions ran high, and you overreacted to something. And at that moment, you just didn't know what to do. I know even I've been in that situation, listeners, where my husband or someone at work says something and it's a trigger. All of a sudden, I'm getting defensive, I'm overreacting, and I'm saying something that I really did not want to say. Well, my guest today is Nina Simmons. She is an internationally recognized coach with 15 years of experience coaching people in relationships of all kinds, couples, families, and work teams about how to handle challenging conversations without disconnecting from those people. Now, Nina's coaching is dedicated to helping people be more effective in their work and in their relationships. She helps leaders, teams, and partnerships live and work to their potential. She is currently based in California and works with clients on the West Coast and across the United States. Her website is ninasimonscoaching.com. NinaSimonsCoaching.com. And now Nina and I have a lot in common. I talked with her on the phone recently and immediately there was a connection. She lived in Chicago and Wisconsin before she moved to California in 2010. And listeners, I know you've heard me talk a lot about being from Minnesota and going to school in Wisconsin. So we're both true Midwestern gals at heart. I love it. So welcome to the program, Nina. So great to have you with us today.
Thank you, Terry. It's great to be here.
Now, I'm so sorry. I think I said your last name incorrectly. It's Simons, right?
That's right. That's right.
Yay.
Don't worry about
okay.
it. Many people do it that other way.
So first, tell us what inspired you, Nina, to become a coach. And in your opinion, what's the difference between a coach and a therapist?
Great question. Well, I think my interest in coaching has always actually been about relationships. When I first discovered coaching in Chicago through the Coaches Training Institute, I remember being really impressed with the way coactive coaches were in relationship with other people. And so as I started my journey, as I did my training, and as I got into leadership development, I think my focus has always been on what is it that has us feel connected to each other and feel safe and productive in our conversations.
Excellent. And I love that because for me, relationships are all about that connection, a connection between two people or a connection between a leader and an audience. So that's what inspired you to become a coach.
Yes, absolutely. And I also was working in the corporate world and was looking for ways to have a more direct impact in people's lives, especially around issues of work and family, and then that expanded into leadership development because I saw a real need for organizational culture to be supportive of all kinds of people in the workplace, but in particular women, families, even men who wanted to have a full and rich life.
Excellent. I love it. And now the difference between a coach and a therapist, because I know when I meet people, that's a really hard distinction. Do you distinguish between a coach and a therapist, and how do you do that?
Well, I get that question a lot, especially from people who are new to coaching. And the biggest challenge is that there are so many different ways to coach as there is ways to work with people through therapy. One of the core differences is, as coaches, we are very focused on the present and the future. We don't spend time, we don't even have expertise in diagnosing what's happening for people when they come to us. We are really much more interested in the kind of proactive strategies. It doesn't mean that we don't work with emotions. You know, some of the best coaches that I know, and even in my own work, we view emotions as part of the whole human being. So that is one of the ways that we overlap with therapy. And I'm not a therapist myself, so I try not to stereotype or make too many categorizations about what therapists do, because I know there's lots of different ways of working with clients.
But I like that distinction. I happen to be a marriage and family therapist, so mm-hmm. I agree with you. Coaches take or deal with the present and go on into the future. And therapists might also do that, but we also work with the past and childhood and growing up and what we experienced and some of that baggage as well. So what types of clients do you see or work with, Nina?
I do a lot of work with executives, leaders in the corporate space, technology, because I'm on the West Coast, also in the financial services industry and other places. Most of the time, they're larger companies, you know, 5,000 plus employees. And then I also work with teams, and then I do a little bit of work with individuals and couples in my private practice. Mostly still around leadership. And, you know, I view leadership quite broadly as something that a leader is someone who is responsible for their experience and the world that they're creating and the world that they live in. So I don't just put leadership in the category of people who have positional authority over others.
And I love that. I remember when we were talking on the phone, you mentioned that, because me as an individual, I am the leader of my own life. And so right. I love that that notion or that approach to leadership, so that we can lead other people or we can lead ourselves. I have to remember that one. And listeners, remember that you are the leader of your own life. Now, today, I mentioned, Nina, that we're going to discuss how to manage very difficult conversations. So tell listeners, how do you define a challenging conversation or a difficult conversation? And can you give us a specific example as well?
Absolutely. So in my work, what I notice is a challenging conversation oftentimes begins with a person who's feeling a sense of dis-ease or conflict even within themselves about broaching a conversation. So the other person may not even know there's a conflict. But for the person who wants to have the conversation or who is, even maybe they don't want to have the conversation, but they know they need to me, that's the beginning of a challenging conversation. And then there are also challenging conversations where both people know that something has gone awry, that things aren't, people don't feel connected or they don't feel aligned around a common sense of purpose. Then in that case, that also can be a challenging conversation to get into.
And so how would someone not know that we're in a difficult conversation or a challenging situation? Is that because I'm not showing the other person that
right.
I'm upset or triggered in or becoming emotional?
Absolutely. So I'm even thinking about the holidays that are coming up and how Thanksgiving and the Thanksgiving table is a great example. You've got all those family dynamics and you know, your mother-in-law may not know that you don't want to sit next to Uncle Fred again this year and that they've seated you next to Uncle Fred three times in a row.
Right.
So it might just be something that you're worried about and they haven't even thought about yet, but you know that you want to bring it up. And you know, if you don't bring it up, that you probably are going to be unhappy. You're going to be unhappy with
right.
the other person and you're going to have a less of a good experience at Thanksgiving because maybe that's something that has been a repeat pattern and your mother-in-law may not even be aware of it.
Mm-hmm. It's so interesting. You mentioned the mother-in-law, right? In-laws are so reactive around the holidays. And,
yeah.
you know, you do step back for a minute and say, should I say something? You know, I've been hosting the holidays every year, or I've been sitting next to this uncle or this relative every year. Should I say something, or do I just you know, not do anything. And so what you're really talking about is making that evident, having the conversation.
Yes. Yes. Because again, sometimes the other person is not aware. I mean, there are other examples where perhaps there's tension in a conversation because of a disappointment that someone has with someone else, and both people are aware of that tension. So in that example, it actually can even be more important to have the conversation because it can get in the way of again, your connection, your sense of well-being. And so, and it might be, I think a lot of times we dread the conversation more than the conversation actually deserves to be dreaded. That once we have it, once we're in it, it's not nearly as bad as we thought it was going to be. But because we're kind of in a more reactive mode and we're seeing things more from our point of view and the situation from our experience, we can kind of make up all kinds of things about the other person or what they're thinking and feeling, and that can kind of get in the way of getting this, if not getting the problem resolved, because it's not always about resolution, of at least clearing the air and getting on the same page.
I love that. You know, that's so interesting. You mentioned that usually the conversation is not as difficult and not as challenging as we make it up in our mind. So we expect difficulty, challenge. I mean, I think we're probably even fearful that we might lose the relationship. So we decide not to bring it up. And what you're saying is that is a strategy in and of itself, that just knowing that it's probably not as difficult as our expectations or the shoulds in our heads.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we all have different ways of coping and not having the conversation, whether it's just to give in and do what the other person, what we think the other person wants us to do, or whether it's to distance ourselves either emotionally or literally, like just decide, well, I won't go to Thanksgiving this year if I'm going to have to sit next to the same person.
Right.
You know,
right.
And
that doesn't, that's not a good, that's
yeah.
not a good strategy, right? That's not a good way to deal with things, just not go at all.
No, so it becomes a win-lose or a lose-win conversation or situation rather than a win-win.
Right. So now you talk about the power of the pause as one way to deal with difficult conversations. What do you mean when you say the pause, and why is that an effective strategy?
Well, when we pause with mindfulness rather than as a strategy to create distance, oftentimes we can kind of be more aware of our own reactivity. So when you're actually in the conversation or you notice that you're in a conflict, if you're in a reactive mode, you know, what they say from a neuroscience perspective is that you're really limited in terms of your logical decision-making. You know, the front part of your brain is just less online. So when we pause and even take a deep breath, including a really big exhale, because I think what most people don't realize is the exhale is actually where we relax. The inhale, we're actually taking in energy. So if we actually allow ourselves to take a deep breath, including exhaling, a lot of times in that pause, the other person might have room to speak. We might get a better handle on what we're feeling, so we might be more resilient. We might even be able to, with that deep breath, realize that there's two people here, and there's two versions of what happened, or there's two versions of wants and needs. It just gives us an opportunity to make room for all of that.
I love that, and it's so relevant, listeners. I mean, I can think of an email that I got this morning that triggered me emotionally. And what I really needed to do was not email the person back, is what you're saying, but take that breath in and exhale, focusing on the exhale, and then maybe pause for a little bit and send the email to myself and the email response to that person, or wait a day before I respond, right?
Yeah.
Pause.
Yeah. You know, that's
because,
great, because email actually is great for communication when we're willing to not send it right away. I think even the idea of writing it, because it's cathartic to write it and then sit on it and read it a day later, you will discover how much of your reactivity is embedded in that email. And then you might decide not to send it at all. You might revise it, but you've gotten the chance to kind of clear your mind and not stew on something.
I like that, because usually that happens, listeners. We write the email to ourselves, and when we see it the next morning, we're feeling different. We're in a different state. We're not as triggered into the conversation or the situation or the challenge. And so that email back to the person, we can revise it. It's not as reactive as what you're saying.
Right.
What are some other tips that you can give listeners to get out of our reactive mode? We're, you know, triggered into something, either ourselves and the other person doesn't know it, or the other person knows it. How can we get out of that reactive mode?
Well, one important thing is actually even to make a distinction between reactivity and an actual trigger. Because when we're actually triggered, there's really nothing productive that can happen in the conversation. And so taking a break, pausing, not engaging is actually a really good strategy, even just saying to the other person, you know, I think I'm actually triggered right now. I don't think I'm going to be the most resilient in this conversation. Can we just not talk about this right now? That will go a long way. Now, we can also be reactive in the sense of just seeing things from our perspective. So that's really how I define reactive. So not able to see the big picture, not able to see what the other person might be thinking, feeling, or wanting in the conversation. And so when it's just about reactivity, there's lots of things that we can do to have the conversation in the moment.
Okay, and what are some of those strategies?
One of them is actually to get curious. It's actually one of the skills that we teach in coaching that's most powerful for having a more productive, safer conversation. So what is the other person feeling? How are they approaching this? What are they seeing that I'm not seeing? If we can ask some of those questions or even just come at the conversation in a more curious way, not only can it be disarming for the person that we're in the conflict with, but we actually get access to information that we probably didn't have already when we were making up the things that we were making up about the conflict.
So asking questions, that's curiosity. And can you give us an exact example, back to the Thanksgiving, let's say, or holiday situation? Is there something that we might be reactive to that you could tell us how to then be curious?
Well, if we feel slighted in some way by a family member, if maybe, again, the seating chart doesn't meet our needs, or maybe people forgot to make your favorite dish, you could actually, first of all, just for yourself, just wonder, well, I wonder if they remembered that I really like sweet potatoes better than mashed potatoes.
I see. So that's a great example of like a vegetarian going to a Thanksgiving meal. Does the person even know or remember that I'm a vegetarian?
Yes. And the great thing about curiosity is that you can address it directly with the person that you feel challenged by, or you might even find another ally. Like I might go check in with my sister-in-law who I have a better relationship and say, you know, I'm feeling a little uncomfortable or a little, you know, disappointed that that no one remembered that I don't eat turkey. And so I'm wondering, how should I approach this with your mom? And, you know, you could even get a little help with it if you're coming from a curious place. If you're just coming from your story about it, that, you know, that people aren't paying attention to you or people aren't taking care of what you need, it's really hard to actually get new information about what's happening.
And I love what you did, because you gave us so many different strategies in that example. I mean, it's not getting personal, not getting defensive, using your I statements when you go to your sister-in-law. I just want to know if you, you know, you can help me, asking people to help you, give you information. Those were so many strategies that you just gave us. I love it, listeners. Excellent. Remember your I statements. Remember asking to get information from other people when you're curious. All of those were wonderful strategies. Okay, other tips if we're in a reactive mode.
Another one is actually, I know this seems, maybe I've already said this, but it actually just recognizing that your experience is your experience and that no one else is you. So, you know, Thanksgiving is a great example because people are so busy. There's so many different people at usually at our house, you know, it can be like 20 people around the table. And my mother-in-law is a wonderful hostess, and she is taking care of so many different people that, you know, when I step into her shoes and think about what she's trying to create at Thanksgiving, I have a lot more empathy, and kind of the noise of what I think I need can kind of just dissipate a little bit. It doesn't mean that I don't still want to ask for what I want or be clear about what I want, but it gives me a lot more connection going into some conversation and a lot more willingness to actually be helpful to her too.
I love that. So it's an understanding what the other person is doing or going through, and it's having empathy rather than just thinking about your own situation. And again, I realize, Nina, that you said that doesn't mean that you have to discount how you're feeling or thinking, but imagining what it's like for the other person is so helpful in order to get out of the reactive mode.
Yes. Yes. And even being willing to be transparent about what you're feeling, and sticking to the facts is also important. So, you know, we talked about I statements already, but if you focus on what you heard or have seen, it's much easier for you and the other person to agree about what's happening. So if I focus on, you know, you may not even know this, but I've been sitting next to Uncle Fred for the last three Thanksgiving, and I really want to talk more to Mary. So you could just ask and make that request, and you haven't actually blamed the other person, which we know that blame is one of the most toxic things that we do in relationships. So anytime you start a sentence with you, there's a potential that you might be blaming. So if I said, you've been seating me next to the same person every year, you don't care about me, that's a much different conversation to be in, right?
And just changing that little word from you to I makes a difference, not only when we're reactive, but also in these challenging conversations or these difficult conversations. But focusing on the facts and the feelings, what we can see, and telling that other person is what you're saying, those facts, we might have a totally different conversation.
Absolutely.
I like that. I like that. And I can imagine how useful that would be in interpersonal or romantic relationships as well. My partner may not know that I've been emptying the dishwasher every single day for the last 12 months. And I am, if I come at that with an I statement, completely different, right? And that person
sounds like
may not have recognized
house.
It. Yeah, right, exactly. That was good. I like that, Nina.
Yeah.
Well, we just have a few minutes left. Are there other things that you can give listeners to help them through these challenging, difficult conversations?
Absolutely. You know, the other thing I just thought of was one of the most common mistakes that I see my clients make when they're talking with me or when they're thinking about you know, someone else that they're disappointed in or want to have a hard conversation with, is they want to know why. They want to know why it's happening, why they're upset about it, and why is actually not as useful. You think it's a curious question, but why is a question that actually has people get defensive, either with themselves or with the other person, and why also activates our analytical brain. And I don't know about you, but I don't think there's a lot of logic going on in these challenging conversations. Mostly it's about feelings and experiences and needs, unmet needs. And so the why question is one that I encourage my clients to just drop and let go of. In coaching, we really like short what questions or even how, like how to make this better, is a really helpful place to go. But the why questions are usually not that useful in these kinds of conversations.
I like that. So not only are we changing from a you statement to an I statement, but we're changing our why statements to what and how statements. That is a very interesting and very helpful, beneficial strategy as well, Nina. Thank you so much for joining us today. I know that listeners learned a lot of great strategies, especially going into the holiday season. It was wonderful to talk with you.
Oh, it was a delight for me as well.
Thank you. And listeners, if you want to connect with Nina Simons, check out her website at Nina Simons Coaching, and that's SIMONDS coaching.com. You can also follow her on Facebook at Nina Simons coaching. And as always, thank you so much for listening. I appreciate you. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio. I'm here to help your relationships be the best they can be. My website is Dr. Terry, thelovedoctor.com. And I also have a new video course that's called How to Find Love in 7 Days. So if you're interested in finding the right person for you, check it out on my website under courses. So until next time, here's to your healthy, happy relationships.